We can all have unusual stories about what happened during the days of unleavened bread. And yes, they're humorous, but the whole point is this. People get so used to sin that they don't recognize what sin is. So during the days of unleavened bread, God has us put leaven out of our homes. So we will learn the point. Do not become so accustomed to sin that you can't tell right from wrong. Okay. Now let's go on here, Exodus 12. And let's begin here in verse 16. In the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and in the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done in them except that which every man must eat, that only may be done by you. Now here's the purpose of the night to be much observed, which begins the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And you shall keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for in this very same day I have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall keep this day in your generations as a law forever. Now today we keep it because Christ has passed over us, with him being our Passover, and our sins are forgiven, and we are to no longer live in sin. So there's the spiritual thing. Just like I pointed out in the previous message, there is the letter of the law, and there is the spirit of the law. Now then he clarifies exactly when these days begin. Verse 18. In the first month, now that's according to the calculated Hebrew calendar, and God gave the calculated Hebrew calendar so all of his people could keep the feast days on the days that they're supposed to be kept. But someone always has to have their own calendar leaven, and you have a plethora of foolish calendar devices out there that are just another way of men trying to figure out how they can be better than God. That's why he gave the calculated Hebrew calendar. Verse 18. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at sunset. And that sunset ends the day. Hold your place right here and come to Leviticus 23. And we will see the proof for it. Leviticus 23. Sunset ends the day, and in ending the 14th, what day begins? When do you begin the 15th day? In the middle of the 14th day? Do you wait until it's dark and you can see three stars? What is it that you do? Okay. Leviticus 23. All right. Let's get there. You won't find it in Deuteronomy 23, I can tell you that right now. Leviticus 23 and verse 32. This is speaking of the Day of Atonement. And it shall be a Sabbath of rest, and you shall afflict yourselves in the ninth day of the month at sunset. Does that not end the ninth day and begin the tenth day? Yes. From sunset to sunset, you shall keep your Sabbath. Now, why did God clearly define it here? Because you can't have different methods of determining when the Day of Atonement begins. Some would begin at dawn, some would begin at noon, some would begin at 3 o'clock, some would begin at sunset, others would begin when they saw three stars at night when it's dark. Now, how can you all be keeping the same Day of Atonement if you start it all at a different time? You can't do that. So God made it very clear. Everyone, even the most uneducated and simple-minded, can understand when sunset is. Would you not agree? Even the youngest. Oh, look, Daddy, the sun is going down. Right? That reminds me of a time when we were coming back from church, and it was in the middle of the drought, and this was about 19, 76, right about there, maybe, yeah, about 1977. And it hadn't rained for 2.5 years. And we were driving home, and this field was all being sprinklered out there. And Rochelle had never seen rain. So we're driving along. She says, "Look, Daddy, look at the rain." See? Well, that was innocent and that was funny, but think about that in relationship. When do you keep that day of atonement? Did God specify it? Yes. What were the instructions? From the 9th day of the month at sunset. From sunset to sunset, you shall keep your Sabbath. Now, even the King James, though it's translated a little awkwardly, has that correct as well. Okay? So we agree that sunset ends the day when it says the 9th day of the month at sunset. Okay? Now, let's come back here to verse 18, and we will see how this clarifies it. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at sunset. That ends the 14th and begins the 15th, does it not? Yes. You shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the first month at sunset. That ends the 21st day, right? 7 days. Okay? Now let's count. All right? We'll do a simple test. You all have enough fingers for this. 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. 7 days. All right? There you have it. Verse 19, 7 days, there shall no leaven be found in your houses, for whoever eats leaven, eats that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. Now, how do you get something leavened? Well, you can have sourdough. You have to let it sit, and it gradually gets the yeast spores from the air. And then you have naturally leavened sourdough dough. That's one way. Another way is you have yeast, baking soda, baking powder, and what other leavening agents are there for, you know, that they have for leaven? Cream of tartar. If it's combined with certain things, that's correct. All right. Should we get those things out of our houses then? Yes. You can't say these are leavening agents, therefore they are not leaven. What do you suppose is in them? But that which causes leaven in a faster way than letting it sit and gather the yeast spores out of the air for sourdough bread. So it should be put out. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. Okay. Now, let's come here to the end of the chapter here. Now, let's pick it up here in verse 40. Now, the sojourning of the children of Israel in Egypt, we've covered this in a recent sermon, so I'm not going to go back through the details of it, was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of 430 years, it was even on that very same day, all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed to the Lord. The night to be much observed is a command by God, wouldn't you say? For bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed by all the children of Israel in their generations. Now, we're spiritual Israel. We are to rejoice in what God has done for us, bringing us out of spiritual Egypt, bringing us out of our personal sins. All right, now let's go on. Let's see some things in the New Testament. We covered some of the things in the Old Testament. But let's come to the New Testament here, and let's see concerning the Passover and unleavened bread. Now let's come to the Gospel of Luke. Luke, the second chapter. Now, I might mention here, which is in the Passover book, and the Passover book is a very detailed book covering every aspect of the Passover and unleavened bread, physical and spiritual and so forth, because the Passover is the very heart and core of which salvation comes from God through Jesus Christ. Now, that's why Satan has done everything he can to cause confusion, and nitpicky little arguments, the 14th, the 15th, you know, and all of those things. All of those are covered in the Passover book in great detail. Now, we're about ready to reprint it, and I like the big hardcover book myself, until I took it on a trip recently, and I was marking it up so we could add corrections to it for this printing, which will be coming up here very soon. And Dolores kept saying, "Fran, do a paperback." "No, I like the hardcover." "Oh, do a paperback. Everyone loved the paperback. It's easier to hold and easier to read." So I had true confession to Dolores when I came home from the trip with the visiting the grandchildren and going to Waco and to Houston. And I had the big hardcover Passover book, and I was marking it, you know, for the changes and what to do. And on the plane, it was very awkward. And I thought, she's right. This is awkward. So I went one step further, though, not only to make it paperback, but we're going to downsize it to 7x10, which will be very manageable. And we reduce the type just enough so it will match page for page for page all the way through. Now, I explain in there, now, why did you bring this up, Fred? For this reason. Because I want to explain to you that when you read Luke, the fourth chapter, there is where the Jews began to call all of the Feast of Unleavened Bread Passover. And that has caused a lot of confusion. So if you have some things that are confusing to you concerning the Passover, you get the Passover book. If you're one of the lucky 30 that are left, we will send you a hardcover and let you struggle through that. You know, make sure you're strong enough to hold it up and all that. We'll send it to you. Otherwise, you'll probably have to wait about 3 months before we get the other one done. All right. Let's come to Luke 2. And let's pick it up here in verse 40. Now, there are a lot of missing gaps in the life of Jesus. Why did God do that? Because he wanted you to focus on the purpose as to why he was here. Not what did Jesus do when he was a little kiddie boy. See? And, well, why doesn't it tell us from age 12, as we're going to read here, until he showed up at age 30 to be baptized by John the Baptist? Why doesn't God tell us about that? Because that's not important. That's why. Now, scholars of the world said, oh, he went east during those years and went to the wise men of Tibet to learn the wisdom of the Tibetans. They haven't read that Jesus was taught by the Father. He didn't go to those idiots over there in Tibet and sit spraddle-legged with the monks and spin prayer wheels. Nonsense, all right? But people get so excited about all of those things. Where did he go? We don't know. Some say Maybe he went to England. Maybe there's evidence that he did, but there is no absolute proof that that is true. And a lot of people get all excited and make great doctrines on that. Don't do it. It's not in the Bible. Don't worry about it. Verse 41. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. Does this tell us that they kept the Passover there in Jerusalem? And if they did, it was probably at one of the houses, and it was more or less a family affair that they had. It doesn't say that they didn't keep it there, but they were there for the whole feast, as we will see there is time involved for the whole Feast of Unleavened Bread. So, especially in Luke, when it talks about the Passover, in some cases, it's talking about the Passover season. So they went up every year for that. All right, verse 42. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. But when they departed, after completing the days, and what days had those had to be? The days of unleavened bread. The child Jesus remained behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother did not know it. But supposing him to be in the company, because they had the whole family, they probably had, you know, and there were quite a few young kids about that time, too, that were the half-brothers of Jesus, you know. You have the four brothers of Jesus, plus who knows how many sisters were at that time. Jesus grew up in a family, because God is a family, all right? And other relatives were there. They went a day's journey and looked for him among the relatives and among the acquaintances. But when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both hearing them and questioning them. And all those who were listening to him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. Why? Because he was taught of God the Father. Isaiah 50 says that he was woken up every day by God to be taught. Jesus said, I do what I see the Father does. So he saw him. I do as the Father taught me. Who taught him? The Father. Now know this. Jesus was so controversial that if he had been taught by the rabbis, think of what the Pharisees and their murdering attitude would have done to that rabbi for teaching him all of these things contrary to what they were teaching. Verse 48. But when they saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, Son, why have you dealt with us in this manner? Look, your father and I have been very distressed while searching for you. And he said to them, Why is it that you were looking for me? Don't you realize that I must be about my father's business? What an answer. Verse 50. But they didn't understand the words that he spoke to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them. But his mother kept all these things in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. Again, doesn't tell us where he was. This sort of indicates he was down there in Nazareth. So we'll leave it at that. All right, let's come to chapter 4. Let's see what it says concerning Jesus and the Sabbath. Chapter 4 and verse 16. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and according to his custom he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up to read. Jesus kept the Sabbath. As we saw in the message previous to this, Jesus said concerning the Sabbath that the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Now, take that one verse. Do you need any other verse to tell you you should keep the Sabbath and that the Sabbath, the seventh day, is the Lord's day? No, you don't. No, you don't. All right, let's look and see some things. We'll come back to the Passover, Jesus' last Passover here in just a little bit, but let's go forward and see what did the church do. All right, let's come to the book of Acts. Let's come to Acts 2 and verse 1. Acts 2 and verse 1. Now we know that the book of John talks about the Passover of the Jews a couple of times. It talks about the Feast of Tabernacles of the Jews. Now, why would John write it that way? Because these are of the Lord, right? To tell us that the Jews were not keeping them properly. They may have had the right day, but they weren't keeping them properly. So here we come to Acts, the first verse. And let's see when God began the church. Don't you think that God would count that as an important day? Yes, indeed. Now, this is the spiritual parallel to the giving of the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments were given at Mount Sinai on the day of Pentecost. Now, we also have some sermons on that, and we have a map where you can plot all the days and how they got there and so forth. And that's when they heard the commandments given by God. Now, here on the day of Pentecost, at the beginning of the ministry of the apostles, God was giving them the power to do the spiritual work that they had to do. And somewhat similar to Mount Sinai, where they had, you know, at the temple, the trumpet would be blown on Pentecost. And now here we have the sound of a rushing, mighty, powerful wind and so forth. So it was similar to it, but in a way entirely different. But they didn't come there the day before Pentecost or the day after Pentecost, and God did not send the Holy Spirit on a day other than the day of Pentecost. Verse 1, and when the day of Pentecost, the 50th day, now that's, I translated it that way because the 50th day is called Pentecost. And Pentecost means count to 50. Now notice what was happening here. And when the day of Pentecost, the 50th day, from what? The wave sheaf offering day. We'll get to that a little bit later. Was being fulfilled. Now that is an exact, correct translation of that articular infinitive, was being fulfilled, right when they were keeping it. Now, the reason that's important, because there are some translations which say, and when the day of Pentecost ended, when does the day end? At sunset. Is there anything in here which shows that this was done at night? No. What did Peter say? It's only the third hour of the morning, right? So it has to be when it was being fulfilled. Verse 2. And suddenly there came from heaven a sound like the rushing of a powerful wind and filled the whole house where they were sitting. And there appeared to them divided tongues of fire and sat upon each of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit, and they began to preach with other languages as the Spirit gave them the words to proclaim. And then they preached Christ. Important day indeed, right? All right, let's come here to Acts, the 12th chapter. Let's see where it talks about the days of unleavened bread again. Now, this becomes a very important section here. Because, verse 4 in the King James Version, they intended to bring him out after Easter. The only place where those translators of the King James Version figured they could put Easter and get away with it. But the Greek is Pascha, which is Passover. All right, let's read it, because there appears to be a little conflict, but nevertheless it shows what the apostles were doing and what was taking place right there in Jerusalem. Verse 1, Acts 12. About that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to persecute some of those of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to take Peter also. Now those were the days of unleavened bread. So Peter was keeping him. That's how they were able to get him. They knew where he was. And after arresting him, they put him in prison, delivering him to four sets of four soldiers to guard him with the intent of bringing him out to the people after the Passover. Well, if the Passover comes before unleavened bread, how are you going to have him come out after Passover, except it should read the Passover season? Couldn't be anything else. Not Easter. Oh, you ought to read the justification that the Protestants give for that. They are so pleased that that word Easter is there. But it's not in the original. Okay, then it's quite a humorous story how Peter got out of there. We won't go through that. All right, now let's come to Acts 16. Let's see what Paul did. Acts 16. Let's pick it up here. Let's pick it up here in verse 12. And from there we went to Philippi, which is the primary city in that part of Macedonia and a colony. And we stayed in the city for a number of days. Then on the day of weeks, now in the King James it says on the Sabbath, but the day of weeks was Pentecost. We went outside the city by a river where it was customary for prayer to be made. And after sitting down, we spoke to the women who had gathered together there. So Paul, in Greece, was keeping Pentecost and all of those with him. Who did he have with him? Well, he had Timothy, he had Silas, he had others who were with him. And they were keeping it. All right, let's go on. Chapter 18. Acts 18. And let's pick it up here in verse 18. And after Paul had remained there many days, he took leave of the brethren and sailed away to Syria, and with him were Priscilla and Aquila. Now Paul had shorn his head in Cenchrea because he had made a vow. And he came to Ephesus and left them there, but he himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. And when they asked him to remain with him for a longer time, he did not consent, but took leave of them, saying, I must by all means keep the feast that is coming at Jerusalem. Now, what feast would that be? Obviously, the Feast of Tabernacles. Well, someone brings up the argument, well, if you go to Jerusalem, obviously you're going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles because you're in Jerusalem. Well, did he keep Pentecost when he was not in Jerusalem? Yes. Did he keep the Sabbath when he was not in Jerusalem? Yes. But he wanted to go there for a particular reason. But I will return to you again, God willing, and he sailed from Ephesus and so forth. All right. Let's come to Acts 20. Now, Acts 20 is also just a little tricky because of the way it's phrased, but you have to look at what really happened. And I just had a question concerning this, which is, let's read it here. Verse 6. But we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread. Now, why did they go after the days of unleavened bread? Now, why would you stay someplace during the feast? So you wouldn't interrupt the feast. Then after the feast was over, you would go. So that's exactly what happened. And in 5 days, we came to them in Troas, where we stayed for 7 days. Now, verse 7. Now, this presents a problem to some people, and I can understand why, and we'll solve it right here now. Now, on the first day of the weeks, what day is the first day of the weeks? That's during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. What is that doing there after the Feast of Unleavened Bread. How could that be? And I had someone write me recently and say, how can you have the first day of counting to Pentecost after the Feast of Unleavened Bread when it always comes in within the bounds of the Feast of Unleavened Bread? All right. Follow it carefully. Let's read it. Let's come back to verse 1. And you will see the answer. When the tumult was over, Paul called the disciples to him and embraced them, and he left to go to Macedonia. Paul went one way, didn't he? And after passing through these parts and exhorting them with much speaking, he came to Greece. Greece then is down towards Athens and Corinth. Now, Macedonia in those days was the northern part, and still is, of Greece. Now, after he had been there for 3 months, he was going to sail to Syria, but when he learned that the Jews were lying in wait for him, he decided to return through Macedonia. And these accompanied him as far as Asia. Sopater, a Berean, and of the Thessalonians. Now today we have counters, and we can count the time, and we can end earlier. But they weren't going to see Paul again, ever again. So that's why he took all that extra time. Verse 10, but Paul went down and laid on him and embraced him, and he said, do not be anxious, for his life is in him. And after he got up again and had broken bread and eaten. Now, if they broke bread, okay, where is it that they broke bread? Now, if break bread means the Eucharist or communion, did they take it twice on the same evening? No one's asked that question, right? Is not once sufficient? So they ate then after it was late and got the fellow came back to life again, they were all hungry again, so they had what? A midnight snack. Okay? And talked for a long time, even until daybreak, and thus he departed. Notice, Paul was alone. Now, why did he leave? This will help answer the question, see? This tells you that the account of Paul has to do with what he did. The other account has to do with the other two parties after Paul left them. All right? Verse 12. And they brought in the boy alive and were greatly comforted. And we went on ahead. Now, Luke is picking up the story. We. See? Paul departed and left. Then we went on ahead to the ship and sailed to Assos, there intending to take in Paul, for he had so appointed, since he himself was going on foot. So Paul went ahead and walked all the way down there to Assos. See? When he left his group up there, when they came to Asia, before they went to Troas, he says, now, when Luke and his party gets here and you all get together, will you come down to Assos and I will meet you there after the Feast of Unleavened Bread? So how long was he down there at Assos waiting for them to come? Doesn't tell us. But he waited there however long it was because he told him to do so. So maybe this will help clarify the question here for you. And after he met with us at Assos, we took him in and we came to Mytilene. And then it gives the rest of the story. But let's come down here to verse 16. For Paul decided to sail by Ephesus because he did not want to spend time in Asia, for he hastened in order to be in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost, if possible. So everywhere we find in the Bible, in the New Testament, what days did they keep? They kept the days that God gave to Israel. And those were the days that the church were to keep. Not the things of Sunday and Christmas and Easter and New Year's and Halloween and Groundhog's Day and you know, the Easter Bunny and all that sort of thing. You know, I remember a minister saying, well, you know, when we came in here to this hotel so we could have our meeting during the days of unleavened bread, the one in charge of it said, unleavened bread? What's that? That's weird. And he answered and he said, well, now if we were a group keeping Easter and we asked for 2,000 chocolate Easter bunnies, you would do it without hesitation, wouldn't you? You wouldn't say that that was weird. See? And that's how the world looks at it, because they're used to one thing and everybody fitting into this mold of worldly Christianity, which is carnal. And when you get true Christianity and you have things from the Old Testament but kept in a New Testament manner, that's weird. That's strange. Why would you put unleavened or put leavened bread out of your home and eat unleavened bread for 7 days? All right. The answer is, 'cause God said so. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.